dead. Dead.
Welcome back to Craft Beer Sit. I'm Bree, the pint-sized traveler, accompanied by...
Hi, I'm Chris Face.
You fucking wish. I'm going to keep that one, actually.
I have pint-sized Chris Face.
Pint-sized Chris Face. I like it. So we got another spooky scary. The last time we did beer news with Allie.
Yeah.
Well, not beer news, more of like an insight. It's like, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a great time. I know she had fun, too, and actually going to be seeing her pretty soon for Tampa Bay Beer Week. So.
That's going to be dope.
Yay.
So if you are listening, you are a big beer fan and you are in Florida, definitely check out Tampa Bay Beer Week. A lot of really fun events, obviously very, very sensitive to the situation going on. They're all taking the precautions. But it's one of those kind of things where like you can't not pay attention to it. So
yeah, it's going to be really great for the releases, if anything. You know, if you don't feel comfortable going to the, you know, even still smaller, more intimate gatherings, you can still just drive around, pick up some beer to go. So that's,
yeah, I mean, with the times too, I mean, obviously like with March rolling around, it's a far different time than March this time last year, but
yeah,
everyone's getting the gist. You got to like, you know, pivot a little bit, maybe do a little bit more package release kind of stuff. So a lot of the breweries down there are kind of doing that thing. So show them some love, man. Go down there and check them out.
I think right now, this time we were 3 weeks in to lockdown last year. So that's kind of crazy to think about.
Actually, when this releases, it'll be 2 days before the lockdown started.
Are you sure? I think Someone just said the other day that it was like, this was the second week of lockdown
last year.
No, you're probably right. I was just going by one specific thing I saw online, so you know it was true.
No, so the only reason I remember that is because it was closed down on St. Paddy's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was March 17th. And I remember specifically the night before, Kristen and I were just riding scooters around, not paying attention to the fact that the world was falling apart. And then we started getting really, really nervous when no one was open and we were just kind of like out in the wild and it felt like an apocalypse.
You're like, we should turn on the news.
No, we actually just ditched the scooters and got a couple tall boys and walked home. It was fucking dope. I recommend it.
Now I can see why you remember that.
Yeah. It's almost a full year when this releases to that. So it's wow. Kind of cool to see, you know, like the slow remnants of things starting up again, at least here in Florida, whether you agree with it or not, it is happening and,
yep. You
know, things are rolling out and it is what it is.
True that.
So go support everyone doing that. Speaking of people that are doing package sales, we got beer from a certain Tampa area, no?
Oh, yeah.
What?
We got...
And these tables are loud.
We got Silly Wabbit, which is
what was
from...
that?
We got Silly Wabbit.
No, oh, fun.
Just kidding. It's an R, like an adult.
Silly Rabbit. Oh, really Sabbit?
Really Sabbit. So this is from the homies at Hidden Springs. Fruit cereal inspired sour ale with lactose.
So they going for like a Trix kind of thing?
By golly, I think that's what they're going for.
Oh, no way.
And it's in collaboration with Big Baby Scumbag, which is a rapper out of Tampa. I think that was the point of it.
I thought that's what Allie said personally, but
Big Baby Scumbag.
Yeah. I've been called it so many times.
Since you were a baby. So let's crack this bee open.
Yeah, so as always, trying to show some love. This is obviously one of those one-off kind of things that we don't see often in our area.
Yeah.
But if you're in Florida, you Ooh. Often... Whoa, Jesus
Look
Christ.
Look at that color. Oh, my
looks
God.
Looks like blood.
Yeah.
So it looks like you'll often find Zero Fucks Given. You'll often find a lot of their... Like, they do a rotating sour kind of mix things, too, so...
I think this is the second time they brought this one back.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice. They do Deja Mu, which is a fun one, too.
This is a loud table.
It is a loud table. Guys, get to know our surroundings by listening to our loud fucking tables.
These remind me of those, like, super maroony pants that you have. Those are the same color.
Which I am still not ashamed of. Fight me on it. That's all I'll say.
It kind of smells like a... like fruity yogurt kind of.
Yeah, I could see that. Like when you buy like a yogurt and it's got like the fruit on the bottom, kind of like blueberry, blackberry.
No, like
the Go-Gurts.
Yeah, Go-Gurts. That's what it smells like to me.
All right. So if you like Go-Gurt.
Which I'm super allergic to, so luckily this doesn't have yogurt.
Oh my God, are you okay?
I think so.
No, she's falling over.
Oh, man. This is really yummy. Mm-hmm. Very, very, like, thick berry forward. That's cool.
Segue. This is a sour. Mm-hmm. The person I'm going to talk about today will leave a sour taste in your mouth.
Solid.
Yeah. I mean, it was weak, but it is what it is. I appreciate you giving me kudos on it. So when we were talking last time about Rodriguez, what's his face, from Pennsylvania?
Oh, shitballs. I don't even remember his full
name. No, to be honest, I had to look it up. Anyway, this gentleman, I remember one thing specifically. We had talked about the fact that he was a large dude, very athletic, right? Mm-hmm. And so we kind of got into a small conversation.
Harvey Miguel Robinson.
Exactly. Rodriguez, that's what I said. We're super professional, everyone. It's fine. No, but we had started getting into the fact where, like, there's a lot of these different types of serial killers and things like that, to where you have ones that kind of, like, lurk around, or ones that kind of prey on people.
So is he a serial killer?
Maybe. I don't know. Because maybe this serial... God damn it. The segues just keep popping up! So this was one of those guys where I forgot about him completely until you mentioned that, and this like larger than life presence of what a person can be in a time where we wouldn't be able to do this today. It would be impossible to fucking do this today. It's insane. So we'll just jump right into it. Cool with that?
All right.
All right. Buckle up. Henry Lesser was no stranger to violence. He had seen punishments doled out on countless prisoners on an almost daily basis. It seemed that at the time, there weren't many ways to deal with the unruly in the typical prison system other than sheer violence. After witnessing a particularly brutal punishment in the fall of 1928, Lesser found himself standing at the door of a prisoner under the number of 31614. The man had been arrested for the theft of a radio and often did his damnedest to buck every possible rule in the establishment. And there he lay, beaten, bloody, and semi-conscious. In an empathetic act, Lesser pushed a dollar through the iron bars of the door as a commissary donation for either food or cigarettes. This generous act caused prisoner 31614 to slowly open up to Lesser about his life and the astonishing crimes he committed within it. The man was named Carl Panzeram.
Panzeram.
Panzeram. It's a weird fucking last name.
It's a very weird last name.
What is that? Is that like Polish?
Panzeram. No.
Oh, fun fact, Prussian. Here we go into delving in the backstory. Here we go. Carl Panzeram was born in 1891 to a married couple in Grand Forks, Minnesota, which is right next to Wisconsin, next to another brewery that we might feature later. Completely unusual and not useful at all. He was one of nine children, and the family had what could barely be described as a farm. The land had been used up for years beforehand, and they were often labeled the local dirt farmers.
I mean, a farm of kids. Nine fucking kids? Jesus.
But I mean, like, at the time, too, this is like, you know,
all their help. That's why they have so
exactly.
many kids.
The late 1800s, early 1900s, a lot of times they're like, oh, you're having a son. He's like, dope. Thank God.
Yeah.
You give it like 7 years, put him to work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Panzeram, on that same kind of thing, would like later describe his upbringing as a cold and shallow one, and the mother was a German Lutheran while the father was a Prussian immigrant. If we remember correctly from the German Lutheran kind of background from Ed Gein, not exactly the most loving and doting kind of mother type that there is, right?
No. Very judgmentally, too.
Yeah, the mother's no-bullshit attitude and the father's persistent alcoholism left quite the void in the realm of guidance and nurturing for the family. Panzeram mentioned in his memoirs that he felt that the only reason he was ever born was to basically be a farmhand. He also felt that he was the go-to for any frustrations of all the family members, saying, quote, my sister and I went to school during the days. As soon as we came home, we were put to work in the fields. My portion of pay consisted of plenty of work and a sound beating any time I displeased anyone who was older and stronger and able to catch me and kick me around whenever they felt like it. His daily routine was school, work, sleep 2 to 3 hours, and repeat.
Ooh.
Yeah. So this is like another one of those ones where, like, you know, when you start hearing the things later on, terrible shit.
It just makes you chronically cranky. 2 hours of sleep, you know?
You would think so.
That's torture.
Yeah. But also at the same time, like, it's one of those kind of things where it's just almost nurture and nature coming up. Yeah.
Yeah.
The father left sometime before his 8th birthday, leaving the mother and the siblings to tend to the farm. This, coupled with the fact that the oldest son, who was to run the household, also drowned in an accident, leaving the household with little guidance. Mm. It was around this time where Panzer Am had his first run-in with the law after being arrested for, can you guess? Public intoxication at the age of 8.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he was drunk as fuck. I couldn't find
wouldn't
a lot
have
of like
that.
No one no. would. Like he's 8 years old, like hi. Like I couldn't find a lot of backstory as far as like what actually happened, but apparently that was a common occurrence in Minnesota.
Okay.
Yeah. So the police returned him home, and he was beat within the inch of his life and put right back to the usual schedule of 2 to 3 hours of sleep, school, and work. Also, side note, we talk a lot about other serial killers, violent people, this, that, or whatever, and there's usually a couple common occurrences. So overbearing some sort of family member, mm-hmm. some sort of injury, all that kind of stuff. And we would be remiss to not talk about the fact that he had one of those injuries as well. Yeah. At some point in his childhood, he had a severe ear infection. And being the fact that the family was poor as fuck, they paid a random person to perform a home surgery on the boy that everyone can agree was super botched. Following the injury, everyone who knew him but noted that basically any sort of empathy and emotion or anything like that kind of went out the door, and he just became horribly violent at like the age of like 9.
So did they cut his head open?
So what I could find is essentially like they went in through the ear canal. I don't know what exactly happened, but like it was one of those kind of things where everyone was just like, you didn't do that right at all, and it made it worse.
Because, you know, sometimes, like back in the day especially, even if one little weird prick to your brain in some type of way can literally alter your personality and, you know what I mean?
Stuff no, like so that. Like we could go into, and maybe we should, lobotomies down the road. Like like that whole kind of thing
exactly.
and what happened there.
Yep.
It's insane just the amount of like differences that can happen when somebody just canoodles with an ice pick around something.
Yeah.
But yeah, whatever it may be, there was obviously a change in the boy. And so, again, one of those kind of things where I don't want to sit there and champion for the kid, but at the same time, like, not the greatest upbringing. And whenever this happened, he's just kind of, like, destined for, ugh.
Yeah.
You know? So at the age of 11, Panzer Am began realizing that the way he was being treated by his family wasn't exactly normal. He resolved to run away to the West and... the quote that he uses almost kind of like harkens back to this like childhood romanticism to like show that he's still a fucking kid. Mm-hmm. He wanted to become a cowboy and shoot Indians. Like, and at the time there was a lot of the, like the Mexican Indian wars going on, those kind of things, pushing the West out. And that's just kind of like, that was the one thing he knew that was different from his farm upbringing.
Refresh my memory on the year again.
So this would have been right around like 1900.
Okay. Gotcha.
So he was born in 1891, right around this time. He's like, actually 1902 technically, right?
Okay.
So to be able to do that, he broke into a neighbor's house, stole some apples and some cake for his journey out. He wanted to get some provisions, but he also stole a revolver. And then so after trying to catch some trains on the way out, it was quickly discovered by authorities, returned back home. Shit kicked out of him again. Poor fucking kid. Like literally the only time he's ever left the house, he's been beaten within an inch of his life.
Yeah.
So at this point they sent him to a reformatory school. So the reformatory school is, you know, no knock on religion, and especially at the time, it's a far different environment, culturally speaking, with religious reformatory schools than it is now. But he was sent to one of these specific religious reformatory schools, and this one specifically was known for a lot of violence and molestation. While there, he said that he learned the truth about men's nature as he was constantly subjected to rape and punishments that basically surmounted to just sheer torture.
Yeah.
One of the stories that I read in the book, and if you ever have time and you're interested in something like this, Panzer Am, A Journal of Murder is like, it's an insane account of somebody that
he's writing it or...
We'll get into that. Yeah. Like, so... yeah, he kind of writes his own memoirs.
Because I'm wondering where these quotes and stuff, like, they're pretty
we'll get into
documented.
That too. It's really fascinating, too, because, like, yes, he does kind of write his own memoirs. There's a lot of backstory, those kind of things. And we know that, like, when we talk to things like Bundy or Ed Gein or, like, Dahmer and all these specific people who do certain things and kind of skirt away from the reasons why they did it, this guy right here is deliberate in everything he does. He's insanely intelligent, and he writes like a motherfucker. Like, like if you ever read through his writings, he has very profound thought process and how he actually explains what he did and why he did the things he does.
Like, sorry if you'll get into it, but what was his last level of schooling? How did he become
he ends up like, and we'll get into it, but yeah. he doesn't go to school for very long.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like he's on the path to, so no, that's just no. curious.
But when you read through his workings, he's a wildly intelligent human being. It's insane. So at the specific reformatory school, when we talk about the torture and unfortunately the molestation and those kind of things, he doesn't actually in the book say I was molested, but he hints on it very, yeah. very, very hard. But there was one thing specifically they talked about, and just kind of this like corporal punishment mindset that the early 1900s had in trying to reform a lot of either, you know, just any sort of people who were doing bad as society thought they were doing, was just basically beat the bad out of them, right?
Mm, yeah.
So this one school...
And the electrocution, like all that shit. Exactly. They just try to get it out of them like
that.
Oh, man.
Remind me later when we go into like some of the things, remind me if you can of the hummingbird that I heard okay. about. So this specific school, and granted, he's like 11 to 14 years old while he's there.
Yeah, super young.
Exactly. He's still a boy.
Yeah.
Like, you can't even take a learner's permit test at this point. Mm-hmm. And so they used to have this place called the Paint Shed. And they called it the Paint Shed because when boys went in, they were one color. And when they came out, they were black and blue.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a name.
Exactly. Very creative. And again, through reading through a lot of stories, it's kind of hard to tell what exactly is fact, what is fiction, but a lot of conjecture yeah. basically saying like, these were just the employees at this reformatory were just kind of like low beat, just kind of like hourly paid employees who were willing to beat the shit out of kids. And to the point to where they actually built paddling machines with cranks.
Oh my God.
They thought of like whips with nine tails and like, this is what they did to kids to beat Jesus into them.
Oh my God.
And not to make it religious, but that's just what that's fucking like what happened. Yeah. yeah. So anytime he does something wrong, he's met with supreme violence. So yeah. he basically starts learning, all right.
I mean,
so,
for years and yeah. years, home and then here. So.
So I'm either on the taking in or I'm on the giving in.
Yeah.
It's basically what he's starting to get at, right? Yeah. The one thing that was a little creepy whenever I was like looking through some of the things is Panzeran was one of the ones where at a very early age, he wouldn't cry and he wouldn't yelp anytime he got beat. So that's, to me, a little terrifying because, yeah. like, that's one of those just like, all right, that guy's got some fucking...
He can just internalize a lot. He just can just
He's just literally turning any energy of a hit into some sort of rage.
And then, and then it just festers.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Oh, you'll find out. It gets so bad. Panzeram's hatred for the oppressive...
This is a nervous laugh.
Oh, yeah. Way, no. His hatred for the impressive institutions and people in general seemed to have started there because 2 years later, he burned the paint shed down to the ground. It was never caught. So, like, me personally, no, fuck
good
yeah.
for you.
Good for you, dude. Yeah. Fuck that place. Seriously. After a few years while at the reformatory school, you know, a lot of kids got into his ear. People started whispering and been like, hey, man, like, the only way you're ever really going to get out of here is by just, like, play the part. Like, whether you believe it or not, like, yeah. just do your best. And this kid is a little ball of rage, but he's doing his best to like try to manipulate his environment and do what he can to adapt to it. So after a while, he decides, all right, you guys want me to be this religious, loving person? I'm going to study to become a priest. And he worked for months under a certain pastor who had a particular penchant for doling out violent punishments to Panzeram in the name of the Lord. One afternoon in front of many bystanders, Panzeram, had decided enough was enough, pulled a revolver on the pastor, and without hesitation, pulled the trigger three times in the priest's face. Unfortunately, and honestly, I say unfortunately, because, like, fuck that guy for beating the guy.
I mean, fuck that
yeah,
guy.
Like,
and how many years? I just am picturing an older guy, too, who's been doing that for 40, 50 years.
And
like,
he's not the only
like,
one.
Like, it might be, you like, a fuck that guy kind of thing, yeah. but I'm trying to stay a little...
I'm sorry, not like, there's so a cold. Lot of terrible things that Panzeram does, but yeah, like, there's, like, this yeah. still little, like, kind of, like, little punk rock attitude where you're like, yeah, fucking
get
the gun.
I mean, honestly, you never know.
But. So the gun didn't go off.
Oh, really? No, really? Oh, my God, really?
So he gets embarrassed, runs out the door, and manages to, like, for the first time, escape a federal institution. Or not a federal, but, yeah, like, some sort of...
He actually successfully escapes.
No, he gets out.
Yeah.
Like, and he...
Finally.
Yeah. So thank God for that guy. He started hopping trains, tried to head out west, and it's here, I'm going to probably say the same thing I'll say repetitively throughout the entire process, is there is so much going on in between all these big, giant gaps of information. You have to read this book. Mm. It is fucking insane. For every time that you hear that he escapes one place and then he ends up in another.
There's a million more stories and details in between.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So, begins hopping trains, heading out west. This is going to get a little brutal. Just a little heads up for everyone. It's during this time that he learned a very unfortunate lesson about life on the road. One night, Panzeram, as he was about anywhere from 13 to 15, was lulled into the alley by four fellow hobos and brutally violated by them for hours. He found himself in a similar situation not 2 months later and quickly vowed to only travel alone. He was around 14 at the time. And like, it's one of those kind of things where like, he was just taken advantage of.
Yeah.
In the book, he writes at the one time he was kind of lulled in by like, you know, they're like, oh, we're having some beers, come on over. And then they just kind of did what they did. Yeah. The second time he was looking for food because he's young and he hasn't figured out the way of traveling. And again, taken advantage of. He later wrote, "These two experiences taught me several lessons, lessons I will never forget. I did not wish to learn these lessons, but I found out that it isn't what one wants in the world that one gets. Force and might makes right."
Aye.
Yeah. Another quote. "Another lesson I learned at this time was that there were a lot of very nice things in the world. Among them were whiskey and sodomy." And
it my God.
Yeah. And it just depended on what end you were in.
Oh, my God.
Not kidding. So at this point, he mentally associates sodomy with power and dominance. Now,
oy.
I don't know how to best spell this out in the storyline, but this guy, as we find out later, becomes a hell monster, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he starts taking sodomy and using it as a weapon. Like, it's not like a sexual thing. It becomes like a
dominant, like, that's the ultimate power move.
That's it. Yeah. It literally is a dominance, like, fuck you, I'm better than
literally.
You. Literally. And we'll find out how bad that gets. We'll try to use sodomy because it's a lot better than any other term that goes on.
Yeah, actually.
Everyone's like, sodomy.
So, wait, can I tell you, like, a really embarrassing story super, super fast? So
I really hope this goes a different way.
It doesn't, but, like, kind of. So... I was in seventh grade and I was playing on a softball team that had a lot of much, 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 much older girls on it.
It's great. And sodomizers.
And so they said the word to me sitting on the bleachers. Like we were up to bat and they said something and I forget what it was, a bunch of girls just being weird. And I didn't know what the word was. So I turned around and I mean, the bleachers were pretty fucking far away and I screamed and asked my dad what the word sodomy meant. And the umpire stopped and he took his mask off and he turned around to the whole team. He's like, "So I heard someone has a vocab question."
Oh my God.
It was like, that's like top three most embarrassing stories I have.
That's pretty solid.
You're welcome.
I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Continue.
Oh God, I hope that turns into a t-shirt.
No, I can't say that. What is that? Fucking A. All right, continue.
So for the record, it's butt stuff. So he's had these terrible experiences, right?
Yeah.
And we're trying to move on. He's trying to get a better life going on. He's 15. Now, what were you doing at 15?
I was a really good kid who just played sports.
Had you experienced a butt ton of sodomy and then also tried to shoot a priest in the face?
I think I was 16, but
okay.
No.
So, I mean, we all wait till we get the permit,
right?
That was
like right? My sweet 16, you know?
Yeah. Not so sweet. No, but seriously, like, keep in mind, like, this sounds like a ridiculous story that, yes, we kind of expect to hear out of somebody who's crazy and shenanigans and blah, blah, blah. But he's
perspective
15.
On how young that is.
15
exactly.
Fucking years old, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're still scared to get behind the wheel of a car,
yeah.
You know?
I still am. But that's because of chronic anxiety. But, so at 15, while drunk at a salon, he signed up for the army, right? He was assigned to serve the higher... So, like, this was, like, the base level kind of, like, age that you could actually get into the army at the time.
Wow.
And so they didn't really see a lot of potential for him, so they basically threw him in a hall. Now, he already has this festering rage for humanity in general, mostly men.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what they do is they throw him into the serving hall where he has to serve the higher-ups. And so he spends his time, and this is super fucked up, but again, very punk rock, like, X-rated Little Rascals kind of thing of, like... He just starts pissing in everyone's food and jerking off on people's ice cream.
Oh, my God. I love the X-rated Little Rascals.
It kind of is. I mean, it's super fucked up.
Oh, my God.
He's like...
He didn't even care if they were... Like, he didn't even have to know him. He just was like, fuck you. You're in charge. You have this authority. So, like...
And he got caught one time.
Oh my God.
And it was when he was trying to put rat poison in for the first time too. So luckily he wasn't able to. Yeah,
now thinking, I'm going to try to kill someone.
All right. So you got to read this book, man. I could go on for hours about it, but like he just gets this deep seated festering hatred for humans. And it's not unfounded. You know what I mean?
Can I ask, is it humans or men? Is it humans?
Just human genitals and being. Okay. Like, he's just been treated like nothing but shit his whole life. So, like...
Besides his mom, it just seemed like it was a lot of really bad male influences. Yeah. But, you know, still had the mom.
And even then, the primary female influence is the mom. You know what I mean? So, like, he's this young kid, kind of small, whatever. And, like, he just hates the world. And so, he's trying to do this, like, little... Kind of, like, punk rock.
He was small at that time?
He's not the biggest kid in the world. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So again, peeing and stuff, jacking off on ice cream. Apparently the officers loved it because they told him, but he got caught.
He was in the army.
Exactly. No, he was.
Oh my God. I forgot you did say it was the army.
They love that shit. Also, I'm sorry to anybody who's in the army.
That's so funny.
later on, about a month in, he turns to burgling and like trying to basically pull one over on property theft, right? So he steals basically pulls a bunch of like clothing out of the armory and like gold pins and all these kind of stuff and tries to sell them in the town around him, gets caught. And it was there that it basically gets sentenced to Fort Leavenworth for attempting to steal all of this stuff. And it was there like he spent almost 6-ish years. I could be wrong. I often am, so I apologize. But 15 to 20-ish is when he was there.
Locked up,
oh, but wow. Also like...
A military prison?
Yeah. Wow. Fort Leavenworth at that time was a fucking monster of a prison, right? Hmm. So Carl was fitted with a literal ball and chain. The ball weighed upwards of 50 pounds, and he had to lug it around everywhere, including the 8-mile round trip to the quarry every day, where he would be forced to hammer away at different rocks and things like that.
It was like that kind of jail.
Yeah.
Dang.
But also... This is where, like, corporal punishment really fucked humanity, because they took this tiny little hatred-filled kid, did that to him, and when he got out, he mentioned, at this time in my life, I was 20 years old, 6 feet tall, and 100 pounds of concentrated, hell-fired, man-inspired meanness. I was as strong as 2 to 3 average men. I was the spirit
at 100 pounds?
Yeah, or 190.
Oh, okay. That's not
that big. I was the spirit of meanness personified. Wow. And he also mentioned at this point that any goodness that was in him, that he believed in, was stamped out by Leavenworth. As a side note, I shouldn't laugh. This is kind of fucked up, but you'll start to notice that Panzerim is just like this kind of like fuck you to everything. And I kind of love it.
Mm-hmm.
On a side note, he was forced to have a circumcision at Leavenworth to stop either.
Oh my God.
Yeah. They did a forced circumcision on him to either one, stop his masturbation to some stories, or two, stop his sodomizing of other prisoners or just like some stories.
So what does that stop though?
They just thought like if you like.
So he's not ejaculate. I mean, no, that's just, not like, even.
He won't touch it if it hurts, I guess.
Oh my God.
So when he was asked about it later on, he wittily replied, if you remove Mozart's fingers, would he not learn to like play using his feet? Because he's fucking insane. Oh. I kind of love it. It's terrible that he did all those things, but God, I love his little snarky attitude. Anyway, it's about this point where I could bore you with almost an hour and a half of his rap sheet. He was constantly in and out of jail for burglary and arson. The main thing to keep in mind at this point is that now Carl is massive, filled with rage, bent on calculated vengeance. I cannot state that enough. This guy's insane.
So do you think he just read a lot in jail?
Remind me of that too. Because like when he gets like placed in jail later on, he just start like when he's in solitary, he starts thinking about the most ridiculous shit that sounds like an insane James Bond plot twist, but could potentially literally be a thing that would change the world. It's and this is some dirt farmer from Minnesota who literally just like butt stuffed and killed a bunch of people his way through the world. Yeah. So he's massive. He's filled with rage. Bends on calculated vengeance and gives absolutely zero fucks about anyone or anything, including his own well-being. Now, again, he's out at 20 years old.
That's how you know he doesn't give a fuck. If he doesn't care about himself that, he doesn't give a shit.
He later has a quote that will go on to where, like, his mission now is to reform people, and the only way to reform them is to dominate them. Ugh. That's it. So Carl picked up a habit of robbing churches and setting them on fire. And he made a hell of a profit doing this. Like, he would literally go in and just kind of went, like, train to train, town to town, robbed, stole, burned the place down. Mm. He was apparently super, like, Norwegian black metal before Norwegian black metal was a thing. But eventually he got tired of being in and out of jail. So this is kind of where it gets from, like, just kind of stereotypical crime spree, whatever, mm-hmm. to an insane level of, yeah. he's like, eh.
Because that sounds like something out west, like robbing and doing, you know,
yeah, just stuff like that. That pioneer,
just sounds, yeah, that just yeah. sounds like some cowboy shit.
This is like the kind of point, too, to where, like, I don't understand the mindset of the average person in the early 1900s, but I can guarantee you most people didn't go, oh, this is a lot of fun. I'm going to do this in Europe and Africa, and I'm going to go travel the world, because that's what
is
he did.
Is that what he did? Oh, my yeah. God.
So he skipped a boat to South America, wow. robbing and sodomizing almost everyone he had the chance to do it to, until he finally like started drawing a little bit too much attention, and then he came up with a plan, right? Panzeram at the time saw himself as a tool to reform anyone he came across, often with violence and sexual assault. However, he had one specific man that he wanted to complete his revenge on, and that was President William Howard Taft. We're going to go down like a weird little rabbit hole here. So when he was at Leavenworth, Panzeram's sentence was signed by William Taft when he was the secretary of, I forget exactly what the office was, but yeah. before he was president.
Yep.
Now this was, he had signed this, he says it's like his prison sentence, Taft does the presidency, and now he's out. So he's a former president, right? So Panzeram was like, fuck that, I'm getting my revenge on this guy. He catches a boat back to the States, like, finds Taft's house, breaks into it, steals $40,000 worth of, like, gems and bonds and all this kind of stuff.
Which is, like, millions at
which
the time.
Which is over one, I checked, it's over $1 million at the time. And he also stole a revolver. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, well, God, I keep saying that.
You
so
do.
God, I'm so
honestly,
terribly,
it's my favorite thing that you do within the crime podcast is when you say, unfortunately, and then
unfortunately
it's,
for
and then
Panzeram. I'm sorry. At this point, I'm still rooting for him outside of the sodomy thing. That's terrible. Taft is not there, so he doesn't hurt him personally. But, like, again, he just made $1 million
yeah.
by robbing a former president and stealing his
gun. And in that time, you could live off that well
oh, yeah.
into your lifetime.
Everything's like 2 cents.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can get a, like, I don't know, like a fucking ice cream at the soda fountain for like 3 cents. I don't know. So... I cannot stress enough.
Ice cream at the soda fountain.
Yeah. I don't know. Whatever the fuck they did in 1912.
All right. Continue.
This is right when the Titanic was sinking, guys. That's how old the shit is. Pre-World War I.
1914.
1915. April 15. 12th. Look it up.
Whatever.
April 12th, 1915, 2:03 in the morning.
I was off by 1 year.
Ay, ay, ay. I love DiCaprio. Anyway. Keep in mind, he just stole a revolver and over $1 million from a former president. And he's on the run, right?
Kind of a dick swing.
So what does he do now? What would you do if you just stole all that money?
Go to a different country.
That's a good job. You must be a little Panzeram yourself.
Now don't time, you ever say that again.
Look at you go. You're like a big burly mustachioed Panzeram guy. He hadn't actually claimed that he killed anyone yet. That's all about to change. He gets like all silly willy with all this bullshit. He goes and he buys a fucking yacht.
Oh my God.
In New York. Buys a yacht and begins sailing around the world. The first thing he does is he hires about 6 people out of New York. And they're all sailors. Like, hey, like, yeah, we're going to go far enough to where you should probably grab all your belongings and your goods.
Don't tell anyone
Don't
where
tell
you're
anyone
going.
Where you're going. Exactly. And they get out, like, I don't know, a couple miles off the coast, and he just shoots every single one of them in the head after sodomizing them and throws them all overboard.
Wow.
Yep. So
that's the first kind of documented murders?
Not even.
No?
He was never caught for a murder.
Ever, ever.
We'll find out.
So did he... He said he did this, though, mm-hmm. right? Okay.
So, this apparently becomes his MO for quite some time. He would routinely dock somewhere, hire help, and then it's just bullets and butt stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bullets and butt stuff. So that's the name of the episode.
Oh, trust me. I wrote that for a reason.
I know you did it.
He literally traveled everywhere. He spent time in Europe, Spain, Sweden, Angola, Liberia, like all these different spots. And wow. then like in Africa, he did a specifically terrible job. There were a few key things that he wrote in the book. One, like, he unfortunately started for the kids. He unfortunately started attacking kids. It's pretty fucked up. And so he would do his typical Panzeram thing. And then he would like make quotes of like, oh yeah, I left them there. They could physically not be any deader than the way I left them. And it's just like, you hear that and you know the kind of person he is.
And so just, killing the kids or they are dead because of what he just did to them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then one specific story that popped up was like a little chilling to me. It's kind of fucked up. So he obviously likes this whole like hiring help, killing them all, sodomizing, whatever mm-hmm. it may be, tossing them all overboard. He was a very racist person and in the books uses very specific terms for Africans, just to kind of show his own mindset as far as like when he's in this country. But he hires, I think it was like roughly 5 to 6 helpers on a canoe and he wanted to go crocodile hunting. So they go out on this canoe on this river. They kind of like drive the canoe out and they start chumming the waters for crocodiles and they're all in this like little frenzy and whatever. And then one by one, pop, 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 they all fall off the side of the canoe and he just sits there watching as the crocodiles eat these people. Like loving it.
I can just see him sipping, slow sipping a mug, campfire mug.
Absolutely. That just like, it's one of those kind of just, this is just one story. So yeah. When we find out later that a lot of his information comes from just him.
Yeah.
It is all verified. Like, people go back and actually check the references.
Into the country, like, yeah, nope, those 8 people did not
come like, back. No, like, literally, that one specifically, they were like, no, we remember seeing a guy that looked exactly like him with 6 of our villagers driving off to a canoe for a river. Like, this all checks.
I mean, and it's like, boom, there's, like, 15 people literally within 2 little boating scenarios, and that's just 2 of God knows how many.
Yep, and this is just the ones that, like, are the big ones. I mean, it has nothing to do with, like, the random just kind of little shit that he does here
and
there.
And not even in the States, yeah.
Yep. So he was almost caught in Europe, and then he decided to head back to the States and was later caught when he accidentally ran another one of his yachts aground and was finally sentenced to another prison
stint. Like, he ran it up on shore?
Yeah.
That's what you're saying? That's how he got caught?
Yeah.
He's just like, oh, fuck, I killed the guy driving this thing.
Yo, this, okay, you have to understand, too, again, this is all just, like, random, like, touching of, like, the main clip notes. This guy would basically buy a yacht, crash it, or sell it, or get another yacht, or steal another yacht, stole one yacht to basically pay a lawyer to get him off for murder from the guy he murdered stealing that yacht, and then gave him the yacht as payment, and then got, like, not fucking kidding, like, this guy was a goddamn yacht captain.
So how many years from start to finish did his reign of terror really last?
So without, and I wrote it this way specifically because the amount of times that he's in and out of prison becomes confusing for a linear storyline.
I guess more so, when you start being like, okay, like he started killing people now. So
pretty quick. Yeah. So like, I would say, you're looking at, he dies pretty young. Spoiler alert. But
he's not still alive?
No. Turns out he's actually got bionic legs. They gave him Steve Irwin's heart.
Wow.
That's the most fucked up thing you'll hear all podcast. So anyway, following this, he has another slew of prison sentences. And so, again, keeping in mind that there are so many that it would just be confusing. And one thing, too, if you ever are interested in something like this, again, read the book. Mm-hmm. So the types of prison sentences he's had things to where he's been tortured on a daily basis, like the hummingbird thing, right?
Yeah.
So when we had talked about that earlier, they talk about the fact that...
Well, you said to bring it up. I don't know what the hummingbird thing is.
So the hummingbird was, he would write about specific tortures that he would go through. And because at the time, none of the prisons are talking to each other. There is no, like federal law when it comes to some sort of like regulation of prison.
And it's shitty record keeping too.
Exactly. So. And honestly too, it's just a bunch of fucked up people torturing inmates.
Yeah.
Like it literally was the medieval times at that point. Oh. Or middle ages, I should say. So like at one point, one of the tortures that he went through constantly was they would lay him in like a bath of water that was like 4 inches deep. And then they would hook up a battery to a sponge and just basically hit his feet and then run it up his entire body. And he's like, it literally felt like 7,000, 10,000 hot needles running through one part of your body. And you, like, after 3 minutes wanted to die or go insane.
No.
That was it. It's insane. Yeah. So, like, there's that. He has multiple injuries from the fact that he's been strung up by his hands and, like, shoulders behind the back. Like, he is a busted fucking dude by this point because of all the stuff that he's gone through, right? One thing to note here, though, too, is that Carl escaped constantly. Mm-hmm. We talked about Ted Bundy. We were mm-hmm. fascinated about the fact that he walked out of a jail twice.
I mean, because that wasn't that long ago. So
no,
that's
absolutely. Yeah. But even then, too, this is, what, almost 100 years ago?
Yeah.
Which sounds long, but it's really not.
No.
So he would escape all the goddamn time. And when he couldn't escape, he vowed to basically help anyone he could escape and get out of there. He would constantly cause riots. He mm-hmm. was one of these kind of guys, when they put him in jail, he basically bowed the fuck up and did the most insane thing that you could possibly do to show you don't fuck with this guy and that
show
I
a
actually,
force, yeah,
like I run this place, the warden does not. There was one time where he set an entire lane of like cells on fire. And then locked everyone inside, but they couldn't get out, but the fire also couldn't get in because of his design of the whole process, just to show he could do it. He also went insane with an axe on the courtyard and basically swung.
How's he getting this shit? How is he getting this stuff to make
because
the fire?
Because it's the 1900s.
How is he getting the fucking axe?
Dude, like, I don't know. He's already fucking jacking off an ice cream. I don't know what to tell you.
Not wrong.
Yeah. Anyway, on multiple occasions, he constantly breaks out or attempts to. And when he's caught, he's beaten to hell. This guy's probably been beaten within an inch of his life more times than anybody has, like, thrown a basketball. I don't even
would
know.
You think that would create, like, a brain cell deficit, not, like, a superhuman genius gorilla man?
The scary part is every time it happens, he internalizes it. He doesn't sit there and break. He just goes, all right, do it. Go ahead. And I'm gonna get right back at you. Fuck you. Like, that kind of thing, man. That's why I kind of love that attitude. I love the attitude, not his actions. That's all I'm saying. At one point, though, he tries to escape from a specific prison, gets caught up in a fence, ends up falling and just shattering things. Like, he has the worst injury of his life. Ankles, leg bones. The way he put it, he ruptured his body. And they try to do surgery and things like that, but they never really... And also at the time, too, he's pissing the fuck out of these wardens
and
off.
And why are they trying to do surgery? I mean, you know, like, nowadays, of course, we would, and humanity, you know, whatever. But, like, this guy proving he is just a monster. Like, why are they even doing surgery? Why are they trying to save him?
I don't know. But then there's also, too, like, there's a story like that, and then there's another story of a specific warden, I think it was in Oregon, years before... that tries to take a softer approach with him. And he's like, all right, so you sit there and you tell me you're the worst person I've ever met. You'll never be reformed. I'm going to open the doors tomorrow and no one's going to do anything. And you can leave, but you have to be back by dinner. And like Carl Panzeram walks outside, sits on a rock and is just confused by the whole thing. And then goes up, knocks on the door and he goes, let me back in. And he does this for months. Like, he actually starts trusting the dude and actually starts getting slight reform. And it's one of those kind of things, too, where at the time, like, it was all corporal punishment. It was all terrible, this, that, or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was one of the first, like, kind of points to where he starts showing, hey, this could potentially work for reform. But that's all here or there. Again, he gets kind of caught up in one of his prison, like, escapes, mangles his body, and he becomes pretty much no longer the same person he used to be. A lot of people start speculating this is the point where he starts getting a little erratic. He starts doing things desperately to kind of like, he's starting to realize, oh, I could potentially, I've lost I've lost my physical abilities. Like I'm kind of, I could be a victim faster than I could be a person doing
exactly.
something.
Exactly. And that fear probably just drove him even more insane knowing like, you know, because that probably hadn't happened to him in a very long time since he was that big. So,
and he remembers
that he was
those
vulnerable
times.
Again. Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't matter how big he is now. He can't use it the same way he used
exactly.
to. It was during the last escape attempt that he was caught and beaten within an inch of his life. After being placed back in his cell, he finally met the aforementioned Henry Lesser. Panzeram later noted that Lesser was one of the few men I did not wish to harm. Upon listening to Panzeram's stories, he snuck Carl a pen and paper and asked him to document his life. Because at the time, no one really has an insight as far as, like, why people are doing this.
Yeah.
And honestly, too... No one knows what the fuck he's been doing.
Nope.
Like, he's in jail for this specific time for radio theft. Like, he tried to steal a radio. That's
oh
why
God.
He's in jail.
Yeah, and then he starts writing his memoir, and then it's like digits of
he
murders.
Bashed a kid's head in, or he, like, shot a bunch of people for crocodile food. Like, it's insane.
Yeah.
So what followed was a full memoir of Carl's lifelong crime spree and an account of one of America's most terrifying serial killers. And again, we talked about earlier, the one thing that's specific about his memoirs is he's not in it for ego. Mm-hmm. He's not.
It's just like vengeance.
He literally, and that's why, like, I don't, I don't know. Like, you can sit there and talk about Dahmer and Gacy and all these different kind of guys, too, to where, like, they have this just grandiose idea of what they are, who they are, what their place in the world is, where this guy, like, knows full out, I'm a shitty person. I do this because I choose to do this, and I do this because, like, doing this gives me gratitude over getting one over on everyone else, and I know it's terrible, but I'm gonna fucking do it to you. And it's this weird kind of just, like... Like
so
open-handed.
He's a psychopath, but not sociopath. Because like everyone else didn't have any empathy and they didn't really give a fuck at all that they were doing it, you know. But he seemed like he understood, but he just didn't have another way of letting go of everything he had pent up.
Yeah, and he saw himself as a, like this tool of reform.
Yeah.
In the way that he, and he did everything specifically, right?
It was for the good somehow, some
in
way.
His mind, yeah. He's the kind of guy that where like when he like shakes your hand, he looks you right in the fucking eye. And, like, you know exactly what
through
he's all
about. Through your soul.
Exactly. Yeah. he's not in it for ego. And, again, it's this deliberate code of vengeance against all of mankind. And he does not waver in following that. Panzeran was later moved back to Leavenworth to finish his current sentence.
Oh, my God.
So he's fucking furious.
Oh, my God.
So upon arrival, he tells the warden, he has a meeting with the warden. He's just like, flat out, I'm going to straight up murder the first person that annoys the fuck out of me. I will do it.
Like, yeah.
You know my rap sheet. I will fucking
And annoy
kill.
Me is very light. I mean, just look at me. Weird.
So Carl was placed in solitary for a very long time. There are some things that say 61 days. There are some things that say 8 months. I don't know if you've ever
it's
been
a big
by
difference.
Yourself. Yeah, it's a big difference. But also at the same time, like he's busted. He's by himself and he's just thinking. And with like another thing that we were talking about earlier is all the things that he's just trying to like, he thinks in his mind he might potentially get out, right? So he starts thinking of plans to basically poison town water supplies with arsenic and kill hundreds
Going
of people.
Big, yeah.
He has a plan to basically sink a British ship while wearing a naval uniform from the U.S.
To
cause a war, exactly. And then basically take all the earnings that he already has and invest them in the stock market.
I mean, he definitely could have pulled that off if he was out. He definitely could have.
Exactly. And this is like, this is the kind of thing to where like you could say he's just a dumb brute who just like muscles
his
way through
the
world.
No, he did all the yacht shit. That's not easy feat.
He's insanely intelligent. Yeah. And when you read his writings, and I'm going to read one here in a little bit, like it'll give you an idea as far as like what kind of capacity this guy has. So after the solitary confinement, he slowly integrated into a night laundry shift with little human interaction. But one of the supervisors seemed to rub Panzeran the wrong way. One afternoon, keeping true to his word, Carl used a piece of lead pipe he had found to beat the man to death. And he later basically just ran amok through the prison for like almost 2 hours, just trying to chase people down and beat the shit out of them. And like
he probably got
guards were literally getting out of the way.
I mean, locking themselves up so they could.
Yeah. Eventually. And like, again, like if have you ever heard of Charles Bronson?
No.
All right. We'll cover him, too, because like. It's just that same kind of thing that we were talking about earlier, this just beast of a person to where, like, when they start, you cannot stop them. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen. So, yeah, beats the man to death. He's later charges onlookers, but he's brought down by prison staff. Panzeran was sentenced to death for this crime. So this is the first murder he's ever actually been charged for. So at the time, they're already sick of this fucking guy. And they're like, all right, cool. We finally have a reason to like...
How did they not just take him out when they were, you know, struggling when they finally got him?
I don't
know.
Like, so in Kansas, death penalty is not actually legal, but because it's on Leavenworth, it's a federal crime. So now he's able to be charged with the death penalty, and that's basically what they're trying to give him.
A jag or whatever.
What's that?
A jag or whatever.
I don't know.
That's whatever.
Yeah. But he leans right into it. He's like, yeah, fucking kill me. Like, I'm not trying to run away from what I'm doing. I'm telling you I'm a terrible person and I will rape, murder everyone that I possibly can. Right. So at the time, though, the topic of death penalties was being a little bit put under a microscope. You have a lot of these religious fanatics kind of coming out and not saying that it's any different now or that there's just religious fanatics against the death penalty. But at the time, it was one of these kind of like, they started the dialogue for it. Like, maybe we shouldn't be killing people, you know? Hordes of people wrote the warden asking that Carl's sentence be lessened. Panzeran responded specifically in the only way you could possibly expect for him to do, which is from the Panzeran Journal of Murder. I can't wait to read this. It gets a little drawn out, but just follow me on it. You ready? I started doing time when I was 11 years old and have been doing practically nothing else since. What time I haven't been in jail, I have spent either getting out or getting in. These are his words that he wrote down. It's insane. What you have done and are doing to me, you are also doing to others. What I have done to you, many others also do to you. And thus, we each other as we are done by. I have done as I was taught to do. I am no different from any other. You taught me how to live my life, and I have lived as you have taught me. If you continue teaching others as you have taught me, then you will lose as they must pay the price. And the price is often very expensive. You lose your all and even your life. Now, you don't know me or my wishes, yet you decide without consulting me in any way. You start to try to revoke the judgment of a legally constituted court and the sentence that was pronounced to me. I tell you now that the only thanks you or your kind will ever get from me for your efforts on my behalf is that I wish you all had one neck and that I had my hands on it. I have no desire whatever to reform myself. My only desire is to reform people who try to reform me. I believe that the only way to reform people is to kill them. In my lifetime, I have murdered 21 human beings. I've committed I have committed thousands of burglaries, robberies, larcenies, arsons, and last but not least, I have committed sodomy on more than 1,000 male human beings.
And that's how many people he killed.
For all these things, I am not the least bit sorry. I have no conscience, so that does not worry me. I don't believe in man, God, or the devil. I hate the whole damn human race, including myself. If you or anyone will take the trouble and have the intelligence or patience to follow and examine every one of my crimes, you will find that I have constantly followed one idea through all of my life. I preyed upon the weak, the harmless, and the unsuspecting. The lesson I was taught by others, might makes right.
So he's pretty much saying he's a product of the system, and that, like, yeah, he was a fucked up person, but they turned him into the actual monster that he is.
He weirdly turns into, like, if the Joker met Wolverine and was just like, you guys created this, and
yeah,
now you're the byproduct of it, mm-hmm, and it scares the shit out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, what he did is terribly wrong.
Yeah.
But he's not wrong.
No, his statements weren't wrong in what he was, you know, really referring to, for sure.
It's just this weird kind of thing to where, like, if you were to just read the rap sheet, you'd be like, oh, this guy's a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you hear the way that it's, like, verbalized and the vernacular behind it, you're like, oh, shit.
It was,
like,
almost poetic.
Yeah.
Like, the way he wrote, like, I mean, just the verbiage.
And there's a
lot
more to it. Yeah. I basically skimmed through some of the parts, but, like, it's insane. Mm-hmm. Like, so, like I said, if you ever want to get, like, a really weird deep dive into an insanely intelligent man who did some very fucked up things, it's a fascinating read on it. So,
is there any documentaries you found or anything on him?
I haven't.
Definitely.
There's a lot of, obviously, we're a podcast that covers him, and plenty of others have.
Yeah.
And
but I
want
to find, like, a good one to, like,
there's a movie,
visuals,
but
you know?
At the same time, it's like a terrible B-rated movie kind of thing. I would fucking love a movie with this guy. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Especially
because it would be all over the world and shit. When have you ever seen a murder movie that kind of, I don't know, was like that? I don't know.
You could literally turn it into, like, a 3-part movie series.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not wrong.
So that entire thing, like I said, was from Panorama Journal of Murder by Thomas Gaddis and James Long. So finally, he gets charged for murder.
Mm-hmm.
He gets the death penalty. Obviously has a very big distaste for the people writing him about his death penalty. And on September 5th, they finally follow through with the actual sentence. So I had written this entire part, and it's one of those things where you'd be like, oh, yeah, he was hung at this time, and he was pronounced dead at this time, mm-hmm, blah, blah, blah. But reading through everything, it does a really good job of just kind of, like, it puts you in the moment. Yes, it's this heavy, tense moment and this air of something bad's about to happen. We all know it should. Everyone's got their own kind of, like, weird moral compass, but also, like, this weird corporal punishment kind of thing. So as it's starting up, you know, he's basically been just like, do it already, do it already. And he's still, like, weirdly kind of fucks with people, but still is very respectful. The night leading up to it, he basically made up his own song that he screamed from his cell to keep the warden awake, to drive him insane. So the morning
Why would the warden sleep anywhere near any, whatever?
He was apparently loud enough to where, like, the warden could hear him from his room.
That's
and whenever,
funny.
Like, Panzeram was this personality, he was, like, this larger life personality where other people in the prison would follow what he would do. So if they heard him yelling, you just had this roar of people
like
yelling.
Like the wolf pack kind of thing. One starts.
So you have that. And then the next morning, it's fascinating to me. People start kind of like lining up. There's not a lot of people next of kin or anything like that. There's not a lot of family members or victims' family or anything like that are lining up. It's mostly just like the jail staff and some reporters.
He had some family though?
Like some of his brothers and his sister were still alive. And,
oh, okay.
I guess one of his brothers actually became a cop, which is kind of crazy.
No.
And that was another thing that some people pointed out too, is like, yeah, like he grew up kind of fucked up, but also
but the
no
other
one else
siblings,
did.
Yeah.
But also they didn't have
a
botched surgery.
That's a really big point, I think. Yeah. But the botched surgery, you look at the photo of him, like, I don't notice like anything too crazy.
Could have scrambled his brain. Who knows?
Well, that, yes, of course. That's that point exactly, yeah, is the only thing, but that it had to have been, you know? How
Who
did
knows?
Everyone else end up normal and he turned to be such a monster?
I think he was on the bottom of the pecking order, and I think...
Was he the youngest?
Yeah. Well, he wasn't the youngest, no? I'm sorry, but he was the smallest.
Okay.
So from a young age, he noticed that you're either on one end or the other of some sort of punishment.
Okay.
And when he started getting bigger, he realized, oh, I like this power, and I can use things as a weapon, whether it be sodomy or bullets or knives or whatever the fuck it may be.
It just brings a lot more interesting, you know, point bringing up the siblings.
Yeah. So again, like kind of harkening back on the morning of his death, you know, you hear about I think a lot of people read into what actually happens, right? Mm-hmm. So they go in and they're like, hey, you know, you about ready, yada, yada, we're going to bring you out. You know, there's just so you know, there's X amount of people out there. And he's like, why are there so many people out there? And they're like, well, you know, there's some jail staff, some reporters, and he says something along the lines, and excuse my French and nothing against religion in any way, but it was just like, are those fucking Bible-reading cocksuckers out there? Because, again, he went through a reformatory school, and he has a very, very hard penchant against this kind of, like, Bible-thumping religious mentality. Because now they're trying to save him. Now they want to come here and offer him comfort. Now they want to sit there and be the ones who are just like, oh, don't worry, Christ will be with
Maybe
you, my son.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the fact that we beat the fuck out of you.
Yeah,
exactly, that kind of thing. So the warden's like, yeah, just so you know, there are a few of those out there. And like, he, in his fragile, busted-up state, still commanding the fear of pretty much anyone around him, was just like, all right, well, get him the fuck out of there, or else you're going to have a hard goddamn time getting me out of this cell, or I'm going to send every person you send in here in the hospital. And they were like, okay. So they walk out, and they get every single person that's religiously associated out of the room, and they bring him out, right?
How do they know, or how would he know if they're religiously, like, straight-up nuns? I mean, how would you even know?
But that's, it's just, I had a mild like admiration for that story, because he's like, there's still this kind of humanity in it, to where he's got his principles and still they're about to put him to death and not treating him like shit. They're like, all right, well, dying man's wish is
and that he commanded the room up until the last minute. He got his way.
Wait.
Oh.
So they walk him out, they put him on the gallows, they put the noose around his neck, and they go, hey, do you have any last words? And he follows it up with, yeah, hurry it up, you hoosier bastard. I could kill 10 men by the, or 12 men by the time you were doing this.
Yeah, Mr. Pastor.
Carl Panzer was pronounced dead at 6:20 a.m. and was buried with a gravestone marked 31614 at Fort Leavenworth Cemetery. If not for Henry Lesser, who spent nearly 40 years trying to get Panzer Ames' memoirs published,
oh wow,
we may never have actually heard of this person ever.
Oh my God.
The only reason we know about him is because of Lesser taking like a friendship on him and like kind of trying to get him to write his life down. Otherwise, like, yeah, there was like these little blurbs and things like that as far as like certain circumstances that actually check out for all of his individual crimes.
But in the other countries, no one would have been able to put those together.
No.
There's no way.
And it's this weird kind of thing where I think every time we cover somebody, and I don't know about you, but I get this like weird feeling where like when we cover Gein, like you can kind of understand. When we cover like Bundy, you can kind of understand. But with Panzer Ames, like you could almost feel like this presence larger than life thing of him just standing in the corner and like what it would be like to actually have to worry about meeting him. You know what I mean? Like,
but weirdly still having like this weird sense of empathy for some reason. Like I didn't for Ted, I didn't for Ed, like none of them, but like still this weird like this isn't entirely your fault kind of thing.
Yep.
You know?
He's the kind of person that I think personifies what the darkest parts of humanity are.
Yeah.
And then looks you in the eye and goes, all right, you can sit there and try to hide from it, and mm-hmm. you can sit there and say it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But I'm telling
but
you
it does.
But
here it is, motherfucker.
But like, you and I will both agree that it does, and I'm the one that's actually strong enough to lean into it.
And I'll show you right now.
And it's fucking crazy.
Wow.
So yeah, that's Carl Panzeram. An insane motherfucker that like almost nobody knew about.
We'll include the photo on the Instagram because I guarantee, like, he said the name to me and I didn't have a clue. And then I saw the mugshot. I'm like, oh shit. Like, I definitely have seen this before. I don't even know where, but it's very famous, famous mugshot you see. So that's crazy. That's good to be able to, you know.
Yeah.
Bring it all together.
Put two and two, I guess.
Two and two.
So yeah, that's just one of those kind of guys where like, he traveled around the world. He stole a president's gun. He was a yacht master.
Successfully.
He fed people to crocodiles.
Yep. Again, successfully.
He escaped from countless prisons and almost started a world war before World War II. So yeah, if you think that you're not doing enough with your life, you're right.
So get off your ass.
And he was a fucking dirt farmer. And found time for butt stuff and bullets. So.
You are so proud of yourself with those, aren't you?
It's just got perfect alliteration.
It really is.
All right. That's
Man,
all I got.
That was great. That was super good.
All right.
And I love that you have the books in here, too. Fucking nerd.
Yeah. I go, no, I but go they are hard actually really cool. Whenever I research it.
We'll post the pictures of the books, too, because damn.
Yeah, he's exactly what you think he looks like.
Yeah, and yep. like mad. He looks so fucking mad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see some mean mugging mug shots, but like, you can see the fury, the fire.
I feel like there's a lot of times when you're ever like out in public at a bar or whatever, and you see people that look like that, and you're like, yeah, that guy's full of shit. But he's got this weird, crazy look in his eye to where like, if you bumped into him, you'd be like, please don't break my soul.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like the other guys, you're like, looks like maybe a case of small pee-pee complex. This guy, like, nope, you've seen some shit.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a smaller pee-pee after the circumcision thing, but like, he still found ways to use it. Ay, ay, ay. So yeah, good thing he's dead though.
Hell yeah.
All right. My God. Well, that's all I got.
Well, you know, that's all I got. And thank you so much for the nightmare fuel.
You're welcome.
And if you ever have some vocab words, do not scream them across the room and ask someone what they
are. Son of a! God, I hope our neighbors find us weird as fuck.
I wonder how thin the walls are.
We'll find out soon.
Yeah. Well, good job, Chris
Thank
Face.
You.
Pint-sized Chris Face.
Pint-sized Chris Face.
Well, that was amazing. And yeah, thank you for bringing that in. Per usual, thank you to Sticker Wolf for being an awesome sponsor. We got some slappers for sale with the link in our bio if you would like to purchase some.
Do it.
Do it.
I'd be happy to give some away for like people who actually submit stories and stuff too, because that would be dope.
Yeah, we actually we have to pick the winner of that, but we just held that caption contest for that pee-pee
That's why
photo
I said that.
Of you.
My pee-pee photo?
Yeah, remember the one where you're like,
Yeah, where I looked like I was basically trying to hold in a fart.
Well, we started a caption contest on that, so awesome. I'll send you all the
responses. How come I haven't seen any of that?
Because you didn't look at our story, I guess.
Ay, ay, ay.
You were tagged in it.
I was busy turning valves and reading about butt stuff and bullets. I just wanted to say it one more time. That's all. All
right. We'll turn that into a drinking game, too, with Murder Boner.
Yeah, and Piggy Palace Good Time Society.
Which remind me of that later. Got a whole thing at Tactical. You got to tell that story. It'll pertain to it later.
All right, so, good to know. Right. Yeah, thank you for Sticker Roll for providing the slappers and stuff. Thank you for everyone who leaves any sort of comments whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And then thank you to all of you, and you know who you are, for the ones that left us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. And if you haven't done it, you could be a better person and just do that.
You could do better.
You could do better. You could not be Panzeram and just, you know, you have that ability. So. Yeah, leave 5 stars. Check us out a week from now. We'll have another news episode. Yep. And actually, we got a bonus episode dropping soon, too.
Yeah, we do.
Yep, and we're not going to tell you anything about it because that's what they're for.
Yep, well, until next time, thank you guys again for continually listening to our shenanigans.
Yep. So I've got Wundles.
I've got Toodles. Do we have threedles? Shit. I lost it. Oh, here it is.
Again, she handed me something on the radio. Bye, guys.
Dead. Dead.